The next three Mishnayos talk about a woman who is giving birth to a stillborn child, and just like any dead body, a stillborn child is a source of impurity on the very highest level of Avi Avi Satuma, literally translated to be the grandfather, the father of the fathers of impurity. However, there is a concept called Tuma Belua, which literally means swallowed up impurity, and this refers to a source of impurity that is totally enveloped and swallowed up by a particular substance, such as the body of a person or the body of an animal. It possibly applies to other items as well, but what is relevant to our case is that as long as the stillborn child is inside his mother's womb, he's considered to be totally enveloped and swallowed up inside of his mother, and as long as that is the case, he would not transfer his impurity to any other item. In addition, a pure item, or even a person, who is swallowed up and enveloped by something, is not able to become Tomei. As soon as the baby exits the mother's womb, however, even before he has come out of the mother's body, he's no longer considered to be swallowed up and enveloped totally, and from that point onwards, if it's a stillborn baby, then he would be able to transfer his impurity to other items, anything in that same room, under the same roof. And if it is a live baby that is under discussion, then as soon as he exits the mother's womb, he would be able to become Tomei. Ho'isha shi makasha lele, the woman who is having a difficult birth, and they took her out from one house to another house, or from one room to another room, and she gave birth to a stillborn child in the second room. Horishain, any item which is in the first room, Tomei Besofik, is impure out of doubt, because although the baby exited the mother's body only once she had entered into the second room, it could very well be that he came out of the mother's womb whilst she was still in the first room, the Hasheni, whereas all of the items in the second room, Bavadai, they would certainly be impure, because the stillborn baby, which is a dead body, is certainly in the same room as all of those items. Om Rabbi Yehuda Emosai, Rabbi Yehuda said, when exactly is this the case? Rabbi Yehuda is not arguing, rather he's coming to qualify and show when exactly the law of the Mishnah is applicable. Bizman shi netelas bagapayim, in a situation where she is being carried out by her arms, and she is not able to walk herself. In such a case, there is a possibility that that the baby exited her womb while she was still in the first room. But if she walked herself from the first room to the next room, then Horishan Tohar, all of the items in the first room are certainly pure. Shemisha Niftach HaKever, because as soon as the womb has been opened and the baby begins to come out of the womb, Ein Penai LaHalech, she loses the ability to walk. And so if she is walking, that is a proof that her stillborn baby is still inside of her womb, and we can therefore be sure that the baby only exited the womb once she entered into the second room, so only the items in the second room would become impure. Now that having been said, Ein lanu falim psichas hakever, this proof and sign of the opening of the womb by the stillborn, that we said that as long as she is walking, we have a proof that the womb has not yet been opened by the stillborn baby, and he hasn't started to exit the womb. That proof is only true, actually, Agilu Rosh Kapika, if the stillborn baby's head is at least the size of the weight, which is at the bottom of a tool used for spinning wool. This consisted of a kind of needle that had a hook on one end, and on the other end, there was a round weight. So if the baby's head was at least the size of that round weight, then it is correct to say that as soon as the stillborn has started to come out of the womb, the woman wouldn't be able to walk by herself. However, if the stillborn is smaller than that, then even once her womb has been opened, there is still a possibility that she's able to walk. So in that case, there would no longer be a proof that the womb wasn't opened while she was still in the first room, and the items in the first room would be impure out of doubt, even if she walked from the first room to the second room herself. Mishnah Hey, this Mishnah talks about a woman who is giving birth to twins, Yotzo Harishain Meis, and the first baby exited her body dead. He's a stillborn, and therefore a source of impurity. And immediately upon coming out of his mother's body, somebody removed that stillborn baby from the room, and after that, the Hasheni Chai, The second baby exited his mother's body whilst he was alive. This baby was a surviving child, the Mishnah says, Tohar. That alive baby is pure. The alive baby gains the ability to become Tomei only once he exits the womb of the mother. And he is no longer enveloped and totally swallowed up within the mother's womb. Now, naturally, it takes a bit of time for a alive child to exit his mother's womb. A longer time than that which it takes for a dead, stillborn baby to exit his mother's womb. And a combination of this, as well as the fact that the dead, stillborn baby was removed from that room immediately as he exited the mother's body, we can safely assume that the second baby, the one which survived, exited his mother's womb only after the dead body, which is a source of impurity, exited the room. So as soon as the surviving baby gained the ability to become Tomei, it already was not in the same room as the dead baby. On the other hand, Harishon Chai, if the first baby came out of the mother's body alive, and once again, immediately upon being born, they removed this baby from the room, and then Vahasheni Mace, the second baby, came out of the mother's body but dead, it was a stillborn. In this case, Tomei, the first baby which is surviving, is impure. Because since a dead baby exits the mother's womb quickly, the chances are that the second baby, who is a source of impurity, exited the womb immediately after the alive baby did, and therefore the alive baby became Tomei before it was removed from the room. In fact, the chances are that the dead baby even touched the alive baby, and they both came out of the womb literally one after the other. Even if it took a while longer for the second baby to exit the mother's body, but it's very likely that they exited the womb together. Rabbi Meir says, however, b'shofer echad tomei, only if the two babies were in one amniotic sac, this would usually mean that they are identical twins. Only in that case do we assume that the dead baby touched the alive baby and it came out right after the alive baby came out of the mother's womb. However, b'shnei shfirim, if the twins were developed in two different amniotic sacs, then we no longer assume that they came out of the womb one right after the other. And since the first baby was removed from the room immediately upon coming out of the mother's body, we assume that it did not become Tomei from the second dead baby, because we assume that the surviving baby was removed from the room before the dead baby came out of the mother's womb. Mishnah Vav, this Mishnah is less relevant to the laws of impurity, but since we've been talking about a woman who is having difficult labor, the Mishnah brings a related law in regards to that discussion. Ha'isha shimikasha leled, a woman who is having a difficult time giving birth, machatchin es havlad b'me'eha, it is permitted to cut up the fetus while still inside of her body, umoitzien oisei evorim evorim, and to then remove the fetus from her body one limb at a time. This was generally the only way to save her life in such a dangerous situation. And the reason why we are permitted to kill the fetus in order to save her life is mipnesha chayeho kodmin l'chayov, because her life precedes the fetus's life. Since the fetus is not yet fully born, he's not considered to be alive 100%. And for that reason, the mother's life takes precedence over her child. However, Yotza Ruboy, as soon as the majority of the fetus's body, or even the majority of the fetus's head, has come out of his mother's body, then he's considered to be 100% alive, just like any other human being. And even though he is now putting the mother's life at risk, and if they don't kill the fetus, it is likely that she will die, or even if it's certain that she's going to die if they don't kill the fetus, a noigimba, it is forbidden to touch and to kill the fetus, which is now half-born, she'en doichin nefesh v'mpnei nefesh, because we cannot override and push aside one life for the sake of another life. We aren't the ones who can decide whose life is worth more, and it is forbidden to kill one person in order to save somebody else's life. But again, this is only true to the extent that they are both considered to be fully alive. It should be noted that although with regards to Tumah Beluah, and Tara Balua, that something which is swallowed up and enveloped by the mother's womb can't become Tomei or can't make other things Tomei. That situation exists until the baby exits the mother's womb. And even if the baby is still in the mother's body, as soon as he exits the womb, he's no longer considered to be enveloped. However, with regards to this law, when the baby is considered to be born and fully alive, that does not depend on when the baby exits her womb, but rather when the baby exits her body fully. Or at least the majority of the baby or the baby's head exits her actual body. There are certain forms of an oihel that both transfer impurity from the dead body which is underneath that roof to any other item which is underneath that roof. And they also block impurity from traveling beyond that oihel, as we have seen in several Mishnayos already. However, there are certain forms of an oihel that mevienes atumah, they are an oihel, in that they transfer impurity from the dead body which is underneath that roof to any other item which is underneath that roof, but v'loi chitzin, they do not have the ability to block the impurity from traveling beyond them. So if, for example, there is a dead body underneath the roof, and above the roof somewhere there is an object, the object would become tomei from the dead body which is underneath it, because the impurity from the dead body rises to the area above the roof as well, because the roof does not block the impurity from traveling beyond it. There's also a third category where it's an oihel chitzitzin that can block the impurity from traveling beyond it, v'loi mevien, and yet it does not transfer impurity to all of the items underneath the same roof. So it's an oihel only leniently, but not stringently. And fourthly, there is a fourth category of things that form a roof over a dead body, but loy mevien v'loy chitzitzin, they neither transfer impurity to the other items which are underneath that roof, nor do they block the impurity from traveling beyond them. Essentially, these items would not have the status of an oihel at all. And the first couple of Mishnayos of the Perek talk about the first category, elim mevien v'chitzitzin. The following roofs are considered to be an oihel, both in that they transfer impurity to all of the other items underneath that roof, and also in terms of having the ability to block the impurity from traveling beyond and further upwards above that roof. Now, it should be noted that the ability of an oihel to block impurity would also be in the opposite scenario. If there is a dead body on top of this oihel, the oihel would prevent anything which is underneath it from becoming tomei from the dead body which is above the oihel. Now, the Mishnah doesn't count the obvious examples of things that are a fully fledged oihel, both leniently and stringently. For example, the roof of a house, which is a fixed structure attached to the ground, as well as items that are not considered to be a kli at all, a utensil. The Mishnah only counts the less obvious examples. Hashida, the teva v'amigdol, a large closet or a box or a large cabinet. Kaveres hakash, a basket shaped like a beehive, which is made out of straw. Kaveres hakonim, or a basket shaped like a beehive, which is made out of reeds. Uber sfina alexandris, or a very large container, which is used as a tank of water on an Alexandrian ship. This was a ship that traveled from Alexandria to Eretz Yisrael and vice versa. And they would bring water on board in order that they would have drinking water for the voyage. If any of these very large containers, sheeshlen shulayim, they have a flat bottom, v'hin machzik n'arboim se'o balach, and they are able to hold at least a volume of 40 se'ah of liquid, or shehim kuraim bayovesh, 2 kor, which is equivalent to 60 se'ah of solids. Solid things can be heaped up in a pile even above the rim of these containers. That's why a greater volume of the solids can be held in these containers. Be as it may, if they are so large that they can hold such a large amount, and this means that when they are full, they are not able to be carried or moved about. That's why it's an important factor that they have a flat bottom, because if it was curved at the bottom, then it is possible to move these items even when they are full. Be as it may, it's learned from Pesukim that a utensil that is so large that when it is full, it cannot be moved. Such an item cannot become tomei. So even though this is a kli, and generally kli, it does not have the ability to block impurity from passing through it, These kalim that are so large and therefore they do not have the regular law of a kli and they're not able to become tomei at all, they do have the ability to even block impurity from traveling beyond them. And certainly they have the ability to transfer impurity to anything which is underneath them, if there is also a dead body underneath that roof. Now the Mishnah shows one of the only examples of something that can become tomei, and yet it still has the ability to block impurity from coming beyond, from passing beyond it. And that is materials that are in a form of a regular tent and a regular roof. Because they take on the shape and form of a regular roof and tent, they are considered to be a fully fledged oihel, even in terms of blocking impurity from passing beyond them. The ria, a curtain, a skrutia, a leather apron, uktavulya, a leather mat, vasodin, a sheet, umapets, a mat made out of soft reeds or rubber, umachatzeles, another kind of mat made from harder, regular reeds. Even though these can become tomei, shenasrune holim, if they are made in the form of a regular tent with a proper roof, then they are a fully fledged oihel in terms of all of the laws of an oihel. Next example, the Eder Behemoth Tomeo Tahira, a herd or a flock of either non-kosher or kosher animals. Whilst these animals are alive, they cannot become Tomei, and their bodies are raised at least a tefach above the ground, the parts of their bodies in between their forelegs, which means that their bodies are forming an oihel on top of the ground. So as long as these animals are still and they're not walking about, each one of them by themselves would form an oihel. And the Mishnah is adding that even multiple animals which are right next to each other, as long as they are touching, it should be added, they would form one large oihel, even though each animal is a separate entity in and of itself. Since they are both still and touching each other, they form one large oihel, such that if there was, for example, a piece of a dead body underneath one animal, and there was an object placed underneath one of the other animals, the object would become tomei because we view all of this like one oihel. Umachunis chayav oif, and living places of wild animals or a bird, which they have created for shelter, even though no person was involved in making this oihel, it nevertheless has got the status of an oihel, the ha'oif sheshochan, and a bird that has rested, it's still, and it is tied. If the bird isn't tied, then we can barely view it as an oihel. It's not a roof, a bird is constantly flying and moving about. Even if right now it is still, it totally lacks any fixture for it to be considered an oihel. But if it is tied in its place, then it would be considered an oihel. V'ha'isamokim livna b'shibolim. If a woman who is working in the field makes a place with stalks for shelter and shade for the sake of her son that she has brought to work with her, these are different kinds of vegetation. These plants all have wide leaves and also remain for a long time. Due to these two factors, as long as they are attached to the ground and therefore they are not able to become tomei, they would be considered an oihel. And finally, food that does not have the ability to become tomei. The law is that food can only become tomei if it has become wet before. If the food has never become wet, then it cannot become tomei, and therefore it would be able to be an oihel. However, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri lo ha'omed b'eichon tahirin. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri did not agree with regards to food, even if the food cannot become tomei. According to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, people never use food as shelter or as a roof, and therefore it's impossible to give the status of an oihel to food. Chutz min ha'igel shel devela, except for figs that have been pressed together into a cake. Because of its thickness, occasionally people would use that for the sake of shade. But all other food would never be used as a roof, and therefore it cannot be defined as an oihel. So it would not block impurity from traveling beyond it. However, it should be noted that even Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri agrees that it would transfer impurity to other items which are underneath it. Even though it's not defined as an oihel, to transfer impurity to something that is underneath it, it does not need to be defined as an oihel. As long as it is ma'ahil, which means that it is physically above it, even if the object itself does not have the status of a oihel, a roof, it nevertheless does have the ability to transfer impurity to the other items which are underneath it at the same time as the dead body.